Hi, welcome to the HoloLens session. I'm Rob Tiffany.
And I'm Rocky Ekman. And we have we don't have a HoloLens. So Rocky Ekman is doing a HoloLens session, and he'll repeat that again tomorrow for those of you who would also want to see that one. Bryn Lewis, our other counterpart over here.
He's partner in crime.
Golf club. Yes.
How do I get the projector working here? Oh, cool, we're good.
Number four.
Yep, done. Yep. We're sorted.
Just fill the projector up with stuff.
Okay, stuff coming.
So just quickly what happened here, the guy was going to do a session over here, unfortunately got sick, so we had to cancel that one. So this is all a little bit ad hoc, so if we drop in the occasional swear word because we're nervous and we don't know what we're doing, then please forgive us on that one.
Yeah.
All right, so we're just going to ramble on about all kinds of things.
Sorry,
like IoT. Machine to machine, have you ever heard of that term? M2M, SCADA, supervisory control, and data acquisition. Kind of sounds like IoT, but maybe 20 years ago. A bunch of us have been doing this kind of stuff for a long time. And, while Bryn's getting set, golly, look at all that. This is great. There's no shortage of fun happening here. Everyone's going to walk away with their own device, right, Bryn? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
I think the Finance Committee would express...
Finance Committee? Excellent.
would not approve that expenditure.
Excellent. You know what? I'll tell you where I got started in IoT, just to kind of kick off with a little storytelling, since I'm the non-official storyteller of Microsoft. I guess he was yesterday.
Yeah,
I don't need pictures, but get that. That's better. Long before we had, a lot of people are like, why is IoT such a hype thing right now? The last couple of years, it's coming together. And I think, in some of our other sessions, we've talked about it. Obviously, things like this is helping it. There's this like parallel thing happening, this whole maker movement. And sometimes people will confuse the two, but there's definitely some overlap. But it goes back a long time. So much of what IoT is, you've got this little thing, a device, a sensor, or a collection of sensors, whatever it is, and it's sending the state about itself somewhere else. And you might say, what's new about that? Because I seem to remember getting information from astronauts on the moon in 1969 using telemetry and wireless and stuff like that. So it's not like we just invented this last week. Because when I talk to different audiences, some people either think IoT started 6 months ago, or they've been in the business, like especially discrete manufacturing, industrial world, where they've been doing machine to machine for decades, and they'll like roll their eyes at you and go, yeah, whatever, this is not new. But what's new is what makes it disruptive is the economics of things. The size of the compute has gotten so small, it's gotten inexpensive. It can run a little batch for a long time. Wireless has become more pervasive, which helps. A lot of facilitators, kind of that perfect storm comes together to make something that maybe before, wasn't accessible to everybody. And so now we all get to play.
If we could summarize that, basically there's been two movements that has brought this change about. One is the democratization of the actual devices. They're cheap, they're easy to come by, you don't have to order them in units of 1,000. It's really easy to get things like little pies. The other one is the infrastructure necessary to make sense of the data that is coming from these devices. Today, you can get these units with very small, very cheap data modules on them, GSM data modules that'll send things through the cellular network up to the cloud for you, right? You don't have to invest in millions of dollars worth of communications equipment to make this happen. You don't have to buy your own server racks to process this data. You just put your credit card in and you're done. Right?
Can't they just do this with a web server and a database?
You can.
Access database?
You can.
IIS,
you
maybe.
Can.
I bet you it'll work for a few hundred.
Yeah. So how are we doing over there, Bryn?
Pretty good.
Are you going to show us some of these?
Yep. Figured I'd start with the smallest one. This is a DevDuino.
And this is kind of like a Reddit Ask Me Anything, so... We're not just saying it when we say we want it to be interactive. Please just bombard us with questions, and we will absolutely try to answer anything we can.
One of the things that interests me is this: the competition's changing. Who would have thought that Honeywell, a company founded in 1906, is now competing with Google in the household thermometer market? Yeah, 2010, Nest launched itself.
Isn't that wild?
A couple of years later, and now Honeywell and Google are going head to head.
And Nest was designed by the guy who designed the iPod.
Yeah.
Who knew?
So
strange bedfellows.
Who's ever seen a nest? No? So a nest is this round little thing that you basically paste to your wall, and you hook it up to your central heating. This is a big machine that uses gas or something like that to heat the air and pump it through your house. We don't have heat pump. Well, we don't have central heating in New Zealand.
Okay.
Yeah, we use like radiator heaters.
Oh, because you've got a lot of goodness.
Well,
because this whole place is about to explode.
Exactly. We try not to warm the place up too much.
Like Iceland?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We minimize our global warming by using smaller heaters.
I really appreciate that.
I thought we just wore more jerseys. Was it? There's no such thing as being cold, it's just being inappropriately dressed.
Yeah, exactly. So the Nest thermometer is this round little thing that you paste, you hook it up, and it sends its data out to the cloud, and there's a web portal that you can use to see what's happening with your house, with your temperature. There's also an app that'll communicate directly with this thermometer thing, and then you can use that to intelligently adjust the amount of power that goes to your heating device. You can see really cool graphs and things like that that comes in to show the temperature of your house and how it fluctuates and do other clever things.
It kind of learns too.
Yeah, it's intelligent.
Yeah.
There's like machine learning involved.
Yeah. It's kind of like the beginning of Skynet. That's how they wanted to get it, have these Nest thermometers in everyone's house. It's really subversive.
Yeah. Really, one day they're all just going to switch off and half the population is going to freeze to death overnight.
There you go.
Just like
that's
that.
How the machines are going to win.
Of the Nest thermometers, none.
Okay.
Oh, of these devices?
Maybe one.
Let's ask Bryn.
There are a couple of RPIs which are running 10 in the selection of devices. So we've got the smallest one, which is a Devduino, which is a Arduino clone. You can see from the size of my hand, they're pretty tiny. They're powered by a little watch battery. They'll run for 6 months on that. That sensor hanging off the side is a temperature and humidity sensor. You can do a solar-powered version with a supercap. These little wireless modules here have got a range of sort of 20 to 30 meters inside your house, or you can go for the Tim the Toolman Taylor more power option and get one of these, which will do about a kilometer. So you combine that with one of the shields which it bolts onto, or for example.
By the way, what is a shield?
Okay.
For our audience members who may not know.
A shield is a way of adding additional functionality to your Arduino, your Starduino device. So this, for example, is a wireless shield. These come out of Oz. And you grab your device and just clip it on top and then plug the wireless antenna in there. And you've got a field gateway which can upload data to Azure. This device has got an Ethernet jack on it. Or you could equally well do it with this one, which has got a Wi-Fi capability and a SD card. So you store your configuration on the SD card. You can edit it with like Notepad, Visual Notepad.
So would you just characterize like shields as basically an easier way to extend your Arduino rather than always having a breadboard and doing pins and all that?
Reduces the chances of letting the smoke out of your electronics.
Excellent. Less smoke.
Less smoke.
Yeah.
And then, you don't want the smoke to come out. It serves a cooling purpose inside the chip.
Yeah.
So you can do things with the shields and make them even more.
Can you raise the shields?
Yes, okay. In phases to stun. So if you want to build something which acquires data and, say, uploads it to a cloud-based service, say, an IoT hub, you can...
I don't think we've disclosed that yet, have we? Oh, sorry, you're fired.
You can chuck a shield on top, and this is one from a crowd out of China, which lets you then plug more devices into it. So this is a particulates detector, PM2.5, PM10 pollution. Uses a beam of infrared light across the slot and a resistor to generate some heat to draw. So you plug that in there and write some code to read it and then chuck on a temperature sensor. Some of these need to be unclipped quite keenly.
So it's reading particulates, is that what you said?
Yeah, PM2.5 and PM10.
Okay.
So that's your new pollution monitor prototype with temperature and humidity and PM10.
You know, it hits home when we when you think about IoT in the past and where it is today. So a long, long time ago, I used to drive submarines, and I absolutely remember, you know, I was on a Trident submarine with nuclear missiles and stuff, but we nuclear, I'm W.
And
nuclear.
Yeah,
Yes. Remember, did you learn about fission in school and all that kind of stuff? And the nuclear genie? Anyway, I remember watching some film. So, but we absolutely, the same kinds of things. I remember on the submarine, you'd have these sensors everywhere detecting different types of gas, like a zillion types of gas and particulates, radiation, all kinds of things. And it kind of goes back to this Groundhog Day story of what's old is new again. These things were around 20, 30, 40, whatever years ago, but they were just horribly expensive and they were only used in industrial settings where you had a lot of money to do it. And now he's wiring it together right there under the Elmo, and it's brilliant.
So if you're interested in mobility, there are, this device here is a gyro compass. Gives you rotation, X, Y, and Z, a accelerometer, and then a compass. So the
compass is useful also in a plane or a sub.
Yep. And then if you want to know where your device is, it's going to be a nightmare packing this back up again. Serious nightmare. You can combine that with the wireless box. Wireless. A GPS receiver. So this kit here is a GPS receiver. That's the board that clips on top, and then that's a mag mount base. You've got an SD card for recording telemetry. You grab a device, you chuck it on top, and actually you grab that and that. Some of the kids I work with at Code Club use this gear. So if you pop that on there like that, and this was one of my students built this particular setup. This is now a downhill mountain biking black box. So we've got a GPS so you know where you are, an accelerometer so we can see what you're doing, and there's an SD card on the very bottom device here, mini micro SD, to record your travels down the Port Hills and Christchurch. So you can sort of clip stuff together and prototype your idea without having to invest a lot of money. There are some pretty wild sensors like water flow sensors. So some kids are doing a project measuring water flow. If you get really serious, we've got EMG sensors, stickers which go on your arm to measure muscle activity. Last year, I did a prezo here at TechEd. In the middle of the prezo, I thought, geez, my arm's a bit itchy. And I had these sticker patches, here they are. These self-adhesive patches, which go on your arm and the electrodes clip onto them. And I was controlling a lead bar with muscle contractions. Turns out I'm allergic to the glue. I'm standing, about halfway through the press, I thought, these are my arms, is she? Yeah. Keep on going, get to the end, and I've got these great big wheels on my arm. So you learn a bit. The kids were looking at these, they were keen. They got the muscle activity one, and I've got galvanic skin response, which is sweat, and we've got pulse rate.
Can you use that to build a truth detector?
That's what the kids wanted to build. They had the pulse rate monitor, sweat, and so forth sorted. My demo was going to be a toaster.
Of course it was.
For the
internet toaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the Hello World of IoT, right?
Yeah. It's like Nirvana. And I even went to the extent that the finance committee approved the purchase of some thermocouples. So I was going to measure the temperature up the element so that you could say the bottom of the element is at X degrees, middle and top, and then use a resistive loop to burn the toaster wee bit and use some image analysis and machine learning. But it sort of got out of hand, so I figured something simpler. So this is a thermocouple, which is designed for measuring high temperatures. There's a sensor on the end, and you just wire it up, and that'll do, I think, like up to 300 degrees. Whereas a sensor like this, which is waterproof, will do up to 125. And basically, you grab that, plug it into the top of the shield, start writing some code, and it just works. Well, it works the second time after you read the instructions.
So is anybody here an electrical engineer? Neither am I. And I can still do this stuff, so we're all good. Does anybody here write code? Yeah, of course you are. We're all developers. We're at a Microsoft conference, right? Isn't this a developer conference?
So there was a question about Windows 10, right? Which of these devices run Windows 10? Well, let's start by clarifying what is Windows 10 for IoT. Okay? Windows 10 IoT Core is a special version of Windows 10 that is headless. Okay, so it doesn't power a screen, it doesn't have UI and such. I lie, it's got one screen that says I'm on, and you can connect to Wi-Fi. But basically, you write a UWP app, you deploy it to your Windows 10 IoT Core device, and that is the entire shell of your device. Boots up into your app. If the app crashes, the device reboots. Okay. Now, there's two devices out there at the moment that runs that. One is the Raspberry Pi 2 B class, and the other one is a Motherboard Max. We've got a Raspberry Pi downstairs in the hub with all the Microsoft devices and stuff there. There's one there running a little browser app that is pointed to the Ignite website. So,
that's cool.
Yeah. So if you want to have a look at what those Raspberry Pis look like, go have a look down there. It's in a little case and also pretty cool stuff. There's other devices coming along.
Qualcomm has a device coming out. You know how they make the Snapdragon processors for most of the phones that you carry? So they've got based on their technology, they've got something called the Dragon Board coming out. In fact, it's ready. In fact, I've already ordered it. It hasn't arrived yet. I got an email saying, well, we're still getting through the FCC or something like that, but you'll have it by the end of September. But it's, I think we're going to see an explosion of what we call single board computers, you know, where it's all stacked on there. So, you know, the Raspberry Pi 2, obviously, the reason Windows 10's running on it is it's got quad core, 900 megahertz, it's Broadcom processor, Giga RAM. You boot the whole OS off your SD card, and the storage is all on there too. And then you got a bunch of USB. You can plug in dongles for Bluetooth and stuff like that. The Dragon Board is going to come with even faster quad core CPU, or maybe it's dual core, Giga RAM. It's going to have storage on board in addition to using an SD card. It'll have Bluetooth for LE, so you can do some of that cool low-energy Bluetooth stuff, and maybe even beacons with it. It'll have Wi-Fi built into it. It has other things. Yes, sir? You know what? I think it'll be both. That's a really good point, because when do you cross the line from maker hardware to commercial hardware? Because, you know, yes, we'll get sand kicked in our face from all the people who are using Siemens PLCs and stuff in the industrial world, and they go, haha, look at you with your little toys. We would never put that in production. I think the Qualcomm is going to be the differentiator. I think Qualcomm is going to find its way. But the cool thing is, it's not like it's some giant leap for you or some alien machine that you don't know how to figure out. If you can do the Pi with Windows 10, you'll be able to do the Qualcomm. It just has more capability, and it probably has the name Qualcomm behind it that people trust. And so I think it's a great way. You know, I don't know if anybody went, not the last session, but the session before in the theater, Emma did a session just on career stuff, but she said something really funny to me in the session. She mentioned someone gave her advice, career advice, and one of the things was, well, whatever you do, maybe it should be something that would be notable to be on the 6 o'clock news. In case you haven't gotten the memo yet, IoT is like the number one cool thing on the 6 o'clock news right now. And so the skills that you will build doing things with Arduino or on Windows IoT Core on the Pi will translate and probably get to big paying awesome jobs and things like that on Qualcomm and things to come. Because I think it's a gold rush right now. People are just swooping in.
I think the important conversation there is that what is the migration from being a maker, playing with a $35 Raspberry Pi, to shipping 1 million units a month, which costs you 35 cents each to make, right? I'm not very clear about how you go about that, but I'd say this is what gets you the investment to go figure it out for yourself, right? You're going to build your prototypes with something like a Raspberry Pi. You're going to get an investor. You're going to start setting up manufacturing relationships, probably with someone in the East, although there are... A while ago at an IoT panel, funnily enough, I met a guy who has a company down in Christchurch, and they make these small egg-shaped detectors, sensors, that uses Bluetooth to send back information about the viscosity of the fluid that they're in. And so what you do with these sensors is you drop them inside your wine vat, drop a few of them in there, and you get temperature readings and viscosity readings and all kinds of things from various parts or points in the wine vat as they swirl around. And it's giving them a lot of interesting analysis about what's actually happening in there. They are manufacturing those things here in New Zealand. So it's not necessarily a case that you have to go to the East. They can do it cost effectively over here because the margin on those is such that the cost is being eaten up by services and sales and things like that. So paying 5 cents extra on manufacturing just doesn't move the bar all that much. So yeah, you're probably not going to go to 1,000 units on Raspberry Pi and Windows 10 IoT Core. You'll probably miniaturize and scale down and find